And we're live. All right, we're gonna get right back to it here. We're gonna go to number 9, deer hunting seasons. And I know we have Mr. Andrew Norton with us. And yes. And Andy Lindblom as well. All right, welcome.
Welcome, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Secretary Roebling, Andrew Norton, a Wildlife Program Administrator. Right now, we'll go through some of the deer season proposals and license numbers. But before we do that, I'll have Andy Lindblom here go through a short presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. Andy Lindblom here, senior big game biologist. And yeah, today I'm here to provide some updates on deer research and management across the state. But what I want to cover today, spend most of my time talking about what we collect for biological data. Talk about our herd composition surveys, harvest, abundance, survival, and talk about some research projects we got going on. And then I'm going to wrap it up with some population modeling, talk about how we estimate populations and next future harvest and population trends. And then ultimately, we use those data to evaluate the proposals, the recommendations for proposals that you have in front of me today. So just jumping in here first to our herd composition surveys. We do these every year. These are pre-season ground counts. This last year in 2022, we classified a little over 16,000 deer, so good sample size. Of that 16,000, about 10,000 were white-tailed deer, a little over 6,000 were mule deer. And this is a survey where we get our age and sex ratios. So this is where we get our fawn to doe ratios and our buck to doe ratios. So just looking at age ratios here for now, this is our estimate of fall recruitment. So last year we had a fawn to doe ratio for white-tailed deer that was 70 fawns per 100 does. This is statewide. There is variation across the state, and we do track and monitor that. But our statewide average was 70. And for mule deer, our statewide average was 61 fawns per 100 does. You can see here with the figure kind of how that tracks over time, but dating back about the last 10 years. Whitetail recruitment is always better than mule deer in the state, so we do have to manage that species differently. You can see here we have had some concerns about some decreasing recruitment estimates in both whitetail and mule deer. Luckily, this last year, 2022, we did see mule deer fawn to doe ratio did come up a little bit, and at least the whitetail one did seem to stabilize a little. So hopefully that trend will continue. So next, I want to talk about our harvest. It's probably one of our biggest data sets and the one we spend the most time on. Last year, our total deer harvest for both whitetails and mule deer was about 55,500, which is, as you can see, real comparable to the previous year's harvest. So this table here just looks at the harvest by species and aggregated here some of the major seasons. You can see for white-tailed deer, our harvest in 2022 was about 48,700. Of that harvest, about 35,000 was from the firearm season. For mule deer, our total harvest was about 6,800. And again, from our firearm seasons combined, total mule deer harvest was about 4,900. And total harvest, you can see there again, was 55,500. The bulk of that, again, from firearm season, about 9,000 of that was from archery, about 5,000 from our youth mentor apprentice seasons, and then about 1,100 from our muzzleloader. So now just looking at whitetail harvest specifically here over time, this goes back quite a ways, but it's kind of interesting to evaluate where we've come from and where we're going here. The green bars are the total harvest, and then what we're looking at, the blue and red, are the doe harvest and buck harvest respectively. So looking back to the early 2000s, probably most of you can recall and remember early 2000s, mid, late 2000s, we had a lot of deer in the landscape. We had a lot of whitetails. In every single one of our management units, our objective was to substantially decrease whitetail populations. We had a lot of deer. We were way over social carrying capacity, and we really ramped up harvest. We loosened a lot of our regulations in an attempt to harvest more and more whitetail, and we accomplished that, as you can see here on this graph. We peaked out and harvested about 2010 at about 80,000 total whitetail deer harvest, which of that, almost 45,000 were does. And then we had, unbeknownst to us, coming at us, we had some hard winter. We had about 2 to 3 severe winters, depending on where you were in the state. So we had some pretty substantial overwinter mortality on top of record harvests. We also had some record hemorrhagic disease outbreaks. And then last but not least, during that 2000 to 2010, we did see a lot of habitat loss in the state. Probably close to 1 million acres of grassland were lost during that same time period. So a lot of things built up against our deer populations. They did decrease substantially. As you can see here, we've been building the population up since about 2014. We really dropped that doe harvest to build them back up. But you can also see that we've began to increase that doe harvest over time because we are meeting objective. We're beginning to in many of our areas. So for mule deer, similar story, a little more variation, obviously, when you look back in time here. But same trend during that 2000 to 2010 timeframe. Same issues, believe it or not. We had too many mule deer in most of our areas, too, and we were trying to harvest more mule deer. Many of the same factors that affected the whitetail population affected mule deer. And again, we dropped that mule deer doe harvest down from a peak of about 9,000 in 2010 to down to around 1,000 here in 2014. And we've been around that 1,000 mule deer does being harvested since then in order to build our populations back up. We're probably not where we want to be with regards to mule deer like we are whitetail in a lot of areas, but we have begun to see increases in our mule deer populations in some of our areas. In fact, we have a few units now, you'll see the here today, a few units where we are at objective for mule deer. So next, I want to talk a little bit about our youth mentor apprentice seasons, because you as a commission, last time we met a couple years ago, we made some changes to the youth mentor apprentice season. So last year, in 2022, our harvest was about 5,200 total animals. Of that, about 500 were buck fawns, because these are antlerless deer. So we had about 4,700 does harvested. You can see the breakdown there on the different seasons, the youth versus mentor and apprentice. Apprentice is pretty minimal harvest there. Mentor hunting has been increasing quite a bit over the years here recently. In fact, that's the top harvest out of all three of these seasons now. As you can see, we harvested about almost 3,300 deer with the mentored hunters. So just looking now at the trend on both the harvest, doe harvest only now for mule deer and whitetail. Let's start with mule deer. You can see mule deer harvest was increasing there, but you can see where regulation changes happened there in 2021, right? That's where we created an O3 unit up in the northwest part of the state, and the rest of the state, we essentially closed down mule deer doe harvest to youth mentor and apprentice hunters. And we did see a substantial reduction in mule deer doe harvest down to about 400. It did come up this last year to 600, but again, that is restricted only to that northwest quarter of the state. For whitetail harvest, again, we've been seeing some increases in that in whitetail harvest as well. This last year, we were around 4,000 total whitetail does shot these three seasons. So next, I do want to just talk about our mule deer doe harvest. I know we've got a lot of discussions in recent years on mule deer doe harvest and where that's occurring, and you as a commission have made some regulation changes to reduce some of that. So we as an agency, but just to kind of let you know where we are with harvesting mule deer does, this is looking the last 2 years. So since we met last time, This is where the harvest has come from. So we've had a total of about, on average, about 1,300 mule deer does harvested. About 38% of those that harvest is coming from our mentor and youth hunters with the 03 tag up in the 03 unit. About 28%, as you can see there, is coming from our firearm hunters. These are hunters who choose to shoot a mule deer doe with their 01 license or hunters that have an 03 tag. We do have areas that have 03 tags too. Same with landowner. We have areas landowners can get a 01 or an 03 tag, and about 17% of the harvest is coming from landowners on their own land. And then archery is at 14%, and then you can see the remaining proportions there of where the mule deer harvest is coming from. I don't have anything more to add to that. I just wanted to put those data out there. So there are some more discussions. We can certainly circle back around to this. So now I want to talk about our abundance surveys. For deer, unfortunately, it's not like elk or pronghorn. We have really good feasible technique to count to get abundance estimates in all of our units. But fortunately, we do have a few areas where we are able to get some pretty good estimates on numbers. We have two areas or two different types of surveys we use to estimate abundance. First, we have an aerial sightability survey that we do up in the northeast part of the state, up in the Upper James River and the Prairie Coteau DAUs. For this survey, we use a sightability model that was developed with a graduate student who's now our secretary with SDSU. And we've been using this sightability model to estimate whitetail populations up in the northeast part of the state. We also have another site abundance survey that we do in the Black Hills. It's a road transect. It's a spotlight survey. And with this survey, we're using a distance model to correct for animals that we miss. So real quickly here on these abundance surveys. So this is the aerial deer survey. We were able to do this year. There's a whole bunch of transects there. If you blew up, you could see, if I blew it up, you could see all the transects. But basically what we're doing is we're flying a fixed wing aircraft, and we're flying a transect. And these are half mile width transects, so we're only counting out a quarter mile of each side of the plane. We have 100% snow cover, so we have pretty good detection probability on animals when we're doing this. We are flying pretty low and slow, 100 to 200 feet off the ground at 90 miles an hour, about as slow as a Cessna 172 or 182 is going to go in these conditions. So it's a really good opportunity to get up and count deer and see a lot of them. And so we did, fortunately, we were able to fly this year. We had great snow conditions in eastern South Dakota, as many of you know, which is great for surveys, maybe not great for deer, and we'll talk about that in a little bit here, but great for counting deer. So our estimate in DAU 9, you can see the little DAU map there on the bottom right. So in that area, our estimate this year was 37,400 whitetails, which is up from the 32,400 that we counted when we last did the survey in 2019. And for DAU 10, the very far northeast corner of the state here, our estimate this year was 27,500 whitetails, which again is up quite a bit from the estimate that we had of almost 20,000 in 2017. So some really good abundance data here in the northeast part of the state, and definitely shows that the reduction that we've had in harvest in that part of the state has really resulted in a growing deer population. So now moving on to the Black Hills, and this is, again, the roadside survey that we do. We have some randomly selected roads that we survey. This is an annual survey. We do it during the last 2 weeks of August. These are spotlight counts, so we're doing them in the dark. And we record, of course, deer numbers, of course, but habitat and distance that we put into a distance model to give us an estimate of whitetails in the Black Hills. So for our estimate last year of 2022, we were at 38,000 whitetails approximately. And you can see here how that estimate has varied over time. And basically the last 4 years that we've been doing this survey, we've been bouncing around that 40,000 white-tailed deer in the Black Hills. And that is well below where we want to be. Our objective, as some of you may remember, is around 70,000 deer. And as a result, so you're going to see our recommendations for proposals to you to reduce or remove the antlers tags in the Black Hills over the next 2 years. Next, I want to talk about some of our deer survival studies. As many of you probably know, we as an agency went through a concerted effort to capture and radio collar a lot of deer in the last 10 years. And we did this so we could obtain estimates of annual survival for both whitetail deer, mule deer, both adults and juveniles. And we captured and collared over 5,000 deer between what we did as an agency and also what we've done with SDSU and grad projects. We have a lot of really great baseline survival data. We have a really good idea of what whitetail deer and mule deer survival should be for different age and sex classes. But we also want to know what influences those survival rates, right? How does winter play into effect? How does drought play into effect? What are other things that might affect deer survival? And that was the impetus behind this top study that I want to briefly talk about that we entered into with the University of Montana a few years back. This is a PhD project. We did capture and collar some animals up in the northwest part of the state as well. But Anna was also looking at our historical deer survival data. And she just completed her dissertation, and she is currently working on a state completion report for us that we will get this year. So I think we're going to have a lot of great data, a lot of great results to talk about what influences deer survival. And one of the interesting things that Anna's looking at as well is how habitat use affects survival. And it kind of tracked deer movements over time and the habitat use over time and how that might impact the deer survival. So some exciting things that I think are coming up that we're going to have some more data and more results to talk about here in the near future. And while I'm talking about research, I did want to mention that we are also wrapping up a project in the Black Hills. I'm looking at estimating deer and elk abundance. This is a trail camera project. We have about 260 trail cameras in the hills. And this is going to give us a great abundance estimate, I believe. We're still evaluating that, obviously, but I think this is going to be another abundance estimate that we can look at white-tailed deer to see if this spotlight one is on track or not. So we'll have some more data to evaluate. So moving back to survival, what we've seen for deer survival or deer mortality since the last time we met a couple of years ago and made recommendations for proposal. We have had at least 1 year of significant mortality resulting from hemorrhagic disease. And some of you may recall 2021 was a pretty bad year for hemorrhagic losses. That upper map there is a map of our reported losses, black and red. Red means we confirmed them through SDSU Diagnostic Lab. But we had a lot of reports of losses late summer, early fall in 2021 due to hemorrhagic disease. Luckily, 2022 was better. We still had a few areas, a few hot spots, but in general, our losses across the state were pretty minimal compared to 2021. And also another thing that affects deer survival, I think is fresh on everybody's mind, is winter severity. And we've had a pretty severe winter in eastern South Dakota this year. This is a map of the reported losses in the eastern part of the state. You can see we've had quite a few, 110 reports. Over 700 animals have been reported dead. We know for sure there are a lot more out there that we don't get reports on. But these data do provide us a relative idea of losses from year to year and also give us a little bit of information on geographic distribution of those losses. We do calculate also, in order to evaluate winter severity, we calculate a winter severity index using snowfall and air temperatures. We do this from November to April, so unfortunately we don't have a WSI to evaluate right now, but you can see the winter severity in that graph there. That red line is the average winter severity that we see statewide, and the bars would be the annual WSI value. And you can see since the last time we met a couple years ago, we've had some really open winters, so that's been good for deer. But obviously this year is something, it's going to be an exception to that, something we need to take into consideration. So wrapping it up with a few slides here on population modeling. So we have our objectives. We talked about that last month. Those are the two graphs there. the two figures there for both white-tailed deer on the top and mule deer objectives on the bottom. We take our objectives and we take our biological data that I just went over. We put those into population models and we come up with estimates of populations. And we also project the future harvest based on past harvest success per license type and per area. And we also look at population trends. And ultimately, we do this so we can evaluate the recommendations for proposal that you have in front of you today to make sure that we're meeting our objectives that we've stated in these documents here. So where are we at for white-tailed deer? Our estimates statewide, of course, this does vary quite a bit across the state. We're at about 3.3 deer per square mile, or about 370 white-tailed deer in the entire state. We believe with the recommendations that you have in front of you today, we are going to have some slow white-tailed deer growth. We believe it's going to be about a 3% growth rate. For mule deer, much lower densities, obviously, and they don't cover the entire part of the state. We're at about 87,000 of that area, about 1.2 deer per square miles, what that would work out to be. Now, mule deer, we're recommending very, very minimal, again, antlerless harvest. And because of that, we would predict that growth rate is going to be a little better than white-tailed deer because we're putting pressure on the white-tailed deer populations, but not on the mule deer. So the recommendations, at least for the major firearm seasons in front of you, we're looking at about a 3,300 fewer firearm licenses. We believe the impacts to our white-tail harvest would be about a 1,600 decrease in white-tail doe harvest and about an 800 decrease in buck harvest for mule deer. Pretty minimal decrease in mule deer doe harvest of about 50, but about a 300 decrease in mule deer buck harvest. So in summary, the recommendations in front of you, again, is our recommendations to manage those deer herds towards the objectives that we've stated. But we also recall from last month, we do have other objectives that we meet or that we're aiming to meet in our management plans. We have objectives on buck hunter success, so that drives some of our buck license recommendations and also license density for our LAUs. We have been pretty conservative in our past harvests, as you can see from some of those historical graphs, but the growth rates that we were hoping to see have obviously been impacted by our hemorrhagic disease losses that we've talked about, severe winter that we're having right now, for sure, and something we haven't talked a whole lot about, but drought definitely can impact deer populations as well. We do believe, however, we still are going to have some slow-growing populations. But there are exceptions to that. There are areas of the state where our objective is to stop the growth. We want to maintain populations, or we even have objectives, as you can see, we want to decrease populations. And so our recommendations are to do that. And last but not least here, just some last bullets here on the severe winter. As we all know, we're losing some deer over winter mortality. So our deer survival has been reduced without a doubt in many areas, especially for those juveniles. They're the most susceptible to overwinter mortality. But we're likely bad enough in many of those areas that we're starting to lose adults as well. But in addition to that, our social tolerance is reduced in a lot of those areas. You saw the presentation last month by Emmer Kieser and all the work that we're doing on deer depredation. We've had a long winter for our deer, but it's been a long winter for a lot of our producers too. They've had a lot of deer herds on them. And so that affects our objectives, which ultimately drives a lot of our license recommendations. But we are going to continue to monitor any additional winter storms we might have, any additional mortality reports that we get. And we are still in some discussions on bringing to you some further license adjustments to account for some of the additional winter losses that we've had since the last time staff met to make the original license recommendations. And with that, that's what I have for deer updates.
Any questions for Andy? Commissioner Beast.
Commissioner Beast, you're estimating 38,000 deer whitetails in the Black Hills, and our objective is 70,000. What's the projected years it's going to take to get to our objective numbers, and what's the plan to get them there?
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Commissioner Beast, I think Andrew really wants to take this one, but I'll go ahead and start. Yeah, I mean, we don't have a crystal ball, obviously, right? But the one of the main things that we have in front of us to do is to reduce that antlerless harvest. And if we can get that doe survival up, that's going to have the biggest impact as far as what we can do for management-wise right now. I'm not going to try and predict when we're going to get to 70,000. You know, we can't predict winters. We can't predict hemorrhagic disease losses. We are doing everything we can to turn that curve, if you will.
If you have projections on survival rate, and you should be able to predict recruitment every year and figure it out from there on how long it would take.
Yeah, we certainly could. There would be a lot of assumptions behind that. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of data to estimate what recruitment and survival is this year in a certain area. And we don't have that for every area of the state this year. And so moving forward, trying to project what survival is going to be in recruitment, there's a lot of factors that affect that, like drought, overwinter, disease. And so there would be a lot of assumptions into that. You could use like some averages, but again, it's full of assumptions. But what we do feel safe projecting is with these recommendations, we are going to see a turnaround in that growth rate.
I had a lot of calls this year after the Black Hills deer season, and people were really complaining they weren't seeing the animals that they're used to. I mean, people had lived around the hills all their lives and hunted there since they were kids. They're saying they're just not seeing the animals there like they used to. So it's good that we're taking a step and acknowledging that the animals are down, and now we've got to do something to get them back. And one other question I had, you talked earlier that you got to manage mule deer and whitetail differently. How do we do that with a mini deer tag?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Commissioner Beast. So we have whitetail tags, right? So we have whitetail specific antlerless tags. And so in those areas where we're trying to harvest more whitetail, we can definitely apply pressure to the whitetail population. In those areas where we want to back off on mule deer but keep the pressure on whitetail with the O1 tags and the O3 tags, we do have the ability to reduce those in order to back off on pressure on mule deer.
Any other questions, comments? Yeah. Commissioner Spring.
Is there any unit or any county this year that doesn't have any tag? Is that all that Pacific buck tag? Some of these counties that have had such devastation and hardly any deer left, that are down less than half the deer population, but yet it's always an any tag. I can't see how it can. Even if it's 10% of the any tag is killed or knows that it's killed, I can't see where that's helping. So I just wonder, is it legal for you to have any buck or a buck tag, or does it always have to be an any tag? I just wonder.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Spring? Yeah. Currently on the books right now, all our staff have to select from our like an any deer tag or an any whitetail tag. It's not to say that as a commission that wouldn't be an option to create a buck only tag. But right now, that's all we consider as staff. That fair enough.
Secretary Roebling.
Commissioner Springs, we actually do have a O2 type tag. It is a buck only tag. So it is in rule. We haven't used it, but we do have an O2 type tag, which is buck only. It doesn't specify what type of buck, but it's just a male buck only tag. So it does not specify between mule deer or whitetail.
But you can't tell a buck tag.
We do have the administrative rule authority to sell a buck tag, yes. We do have it in our slate of opportunities. We have, for example, archery, animal is a buck only license, the same type of concept, yes.
I was just real worried about some of the areas where there's very few deer left, that it's going to be hard to find a buck. If you're selling any tags, just how many does are going to get shot with? Don't even need it. I mean, the population is terrible already. And It's an any tag too, and that just worries me. How many does might get shot in some of those areas? There's a lot of areas out there that there isn't even half as many deer as it used to be. It might only be 20%. But when it's an any tag, I'm just scared how many does I get shot.
Any other questions? I know you brought up a different slide. Did you want to touch on anything with the slide that you brought up?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Yeah, Commissioner Spring, I just brought up the mule deer doe harvest one for an example. We, you know, obviously we do estimate the doe harvest on those type 01 tags. So right now we do have firearm licenses that have type 01 tags. Land on your own land, they get a type 01 tag, and then archery, special buck, muzzleloader, refuge, or some. Those are the seasons that have type 01 licenses available.
Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire. Yeah, Andy, can you go to the slide with the population for those two northern areas? Okay, yeah, there you go. Thank you. The DAU 37,000 or 37.4 on 9, and then on 10 was 27.5. Both pretty, you know, especially in 10, my area, I guess, pretty good increase from 2017, the last time that one was counted. Can you weigh in on where the stance was in 2017? If you do, I don't know if you have, if you remember, or if you have, remember seeing what the population goal was in 17. And I guess basically I'm asking, is this increase by design and it followed, or is this an increase that was not planned and maybe even not expected in both of those areas?
Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
Commissioner Whitmire. Yeah, that's a good question, and I'll try to recall as accurately as possible here some of the discussions that we've had with staff up in Region 4 there on exactly what you're talking about. And one of the challenges with the DAU 10 estimate is there's been such a long time period from 2017 to 2023, and objectives have varied a little bit between those time periods. For a while there, we were really trying to build a population, but we did ramp up harvest on the animals as well. So it's not just a straight line. They were growing really fast at first, and we probably slowed that down. It's hard to pick that up when you only have two data points. But we are still about way above where we were before. We're probably above, or we are above objective in some areas, so, or at least getting to objective in many of those areas. So a lot of discussion on how to balance where we are now, because some areas we have too many deer, or we need to put harvest pressure on deer to keep where we're at, but at the same time account for winter mortality that we're seeing too. So I hope that helps some of the background there.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, thank you. I just, I still remember winter. It's still happening up there. One of the things is the winter set in, you know, already in November, and these deer were bunching up before the season started. You know, the downside of that is a lot of these walk-in areas were deer-free, and a lot of these folks that had, you know, some food plots, you know, good things and whatnot, but a few more deer than what they'd expected or wanted, maybe even in many cases, and thus the deer feeding, you know, situations and fencing that we've got going on. But I just kind of, you know, what just kind of wanted to get a feel if, you know, these years we get these challenging winters, we don't just end up with more deer than what we want, and now we got a problem on our hands. So thank you.
Any other questions or comments for Andy? Oh, yeah, Commissioner Lockham.
Yes, Andy, Commissioner Locken here. What kind of harvest success did we see in 23? Remind me of that. Do you have that number? Like, I'm specifically talking about whitetail. All my comments are on whitetail.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Locken, I don't have that number right at my fingertips. We're scrambling to get the numbers all together in time for this meeting, and success is one thing that I didn't summarize on this presentation, but I can definitely get that out of our database and report back to you. So I don't remember any huge concerns when we looked at it, but I don't have the numbers off the top of my head.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments at this time? Commissioner Locke, or Spring.
When you did the survey or flying, a lot of the areas for your talent. Was that early winter or was that after, I mean, in the last month or two?
Madam Chair, Commissioner Spring, so we would have started that, would have been probably late January and finished in early February. So, we had a good winter going on, but it wasn't at the end here, but like you mentioned.
So a lot of the devastation with the bad winter probably happened after that on the death loss and whatever.
Certainly, or yet to come even. One thing we know from past research is March and April are really the deer killer months. If we get another storm in April, even if they've been feeding on green grass, and it's still going to be really hard on the population. So right now they're at the tipping point, and hopefully they don't get another winter storm. But as the snow melts, we're going to find more dead deer too. Without a doubt, a lot of them are covered up in the northeast part of the state. So we by no means do we think the estimate that we got in January and February is necessarily indicative of all the deer there, because we know we've had some losses.
My place, just this last farm, it wasn't that bad. We had 8 inches of snow. We found 4 dead deer and very few left. It did kill them. And it wasn't spirit wanderers. But I think the death loss is good to be real high in one area.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Those late storms are hard on deer, for sure.
Very good. Any other comments or questions? Very good information. I think we're going to have some more in-depth conversations moving forward, so thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on to the next item. Is that you, Andrew Norton? Our deer hunting season's license allocations.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners again, Secretary Roebling, Andrew Norton, Wildlife Program Administrator, and Andy presented the information there, and I'll move into just reviewing the 5 deer seasons that were proposed last month that are set to be finalized next month. There was no changes to any of those, and then I'll get into some of the specific license number changes. Just wanted to start out and follow up on a couple of those questions. In regards to the 01 license, one example that might be relevant to Commissioner Spring, in Unit 49B in 2021, so Eastern Meade County, there were 721 type 01 licenses sold. On those, there were 5 female white-tailed deer harvested and 17 female mule deer harvested. So just over 20 females harvested on those 720 01 licenses. Certainly there are times when that female harvest can be higher, but a lot of times with that 01, people are particularly focusing on mule deer bucks or white-tailed bucks. And then to Commissioner Locken, the success rate, I believe our objectives on our buck harvest success are range from like 60 to 70%, but East River was just under 50%, and West River it's a little bit higher, but also just under 50%, just overall harvest success. So moving into 5 of the 8 deer seasons that I mentioned last month, there were some minor changes to. I'll just really quickly go through all of them. Again, no action is necessary if there are no changes desired. The first two on pages 22 and then again on page 25 are involving the youth and apprentice deer seasons. It's both basically the exact same change. What it is it's removing the closed area specifications to Fort Meade BLM property. So that's right next to Sturgis near the Black Hills. And that property, currently part of it is closed. However, it's all restricted to archery only. So I think there was some misunderstanding that that would be opened up to firearm hunting for youth and apprentice hunters, which is not the case. They would still be restricted to archery only equipment, even though they have that firearm deer license. And this would apply to the mentored hunting season as well, which doesn't appear in rule here in the change, but basically the same exact change would apply to all 3 of those opportunities. Again, the apprentice hunter deer season, the youth deer hunting season, and the mentored hunting deer season. And that would be just opening up Fort Meade BLM property. The next change was on page 28 for Custer State Park. That was removing the restriction that was archery only equipment from November 1 through November 15th. This is Administrative Rule 410641. So previously, the entire month of November was open to Custer State Park, essentially the buck hunting with those either O1s, but usually they're type 11 tags, so the any whitetail deer tags. And the first half of that month was archery only equipment. There's very low pressure. You'll see that with the license numbers being proposed in the next portion here. And staff didn't feel that allowing the opportunity to harvest a buck during the first half of that month with a firearm would have a significant impact on the age structure of the bucks or harvest success and affect that population biologically. Moving on to refuge deer on page 30, that's Administrative Rule 410636. A couple changes there. The first one was adding a restriction to the fourth season in Sand Lake. So historically, that was an antlerless only firearm season. And what staff wanted to do there is restrict that to muzzleloader only. And then, as you'll see in the license changes, remove those antlerless licenses and substitute those with any deer licenses to provide additional buck hunting opportunity. I mentioned last month, varying water levels and conditions make hunting unpredictable in that unit. That's why there's a lot of different seasons and success is really hard to predict. It's kind of contingent on weather conditions. Another recommended change for the refuges was just to allow La Creek Refuge to specify their unit boundaries and changing that in rule. So moving on finally to West River Deer, this is going to be very similar to what I described for the youth mentor and apprentice hunting change. This would open up that Fort Meade BLM property to anyone with a 49A firearm license. But again, to be clear, they cannot use a firearm in Fort Meade BLM property. That would be restricted to archery only equipment. And then just a really minor rule cleanup, changing a county road number from 319 to 317 for West River Deer. So at this point, I can take any questions. Again, no action is necessary on these seasons, but should be happy to answer any questions, and then I can move on to the license number changes.
Very good. Any questions? It looks like there are none, so we can keep going.
Okay, great. So be tables for all the department's proposed recommended license numbers for the next two deer hunting seasons. The format of each one of these seasons, for some of the smaller seasons, this first page is just archery access permits. At the top will be the recommendation, and then the second table will be a comparison from what it was the last 2 years to what it'll be this year and next year if this is adopted. So starting with the archery access permits, how those work is archery hunters finalized the changes last month. But as you know, archery hunter can get a statewide type O1 license. They can also get a resident can get a West River or East River license. In addition to that, if they want to hunt some of these properties, these limited access units, they would need to apply for one of these limited access permits. So those properties are Adams Homestead Nature Preserve, Good Earth State Park, West River Deer Hunting Unit 27L on the south side of the Black Hills, and then West River Deer Hunting Unit 35L, which is in Harding County, northwestern South Dakota, mainly Custer National Forest. So the only change here is to reduce the number of access permits for both residents and non-residents in Custer National Forest there in Harding County. The goal here is to reduce mule deer buck harvest and try to bring those numbers up a little bit, which will basically be a theme in a lot of Western South Dakota, is to reduce license numbers to recover both whitetail and mule deer populations. Moving on to page 37, muzzleloader deer, there's no change there. 1,000 type O1 license. I will remind the commission that there's an LM type 13, which is an any antlerless whitetail license that are unlimited for muzzleloader deer, but just the 1,000 that would be the type O1 any deer licenses and no change. Black Hills deer, Andy discussed this quite a bit. Commissioner Beast brought it up that we are well below objective and we're doing everything we can here to recover that population. some of the significant changes you'll see, there's no change to the any deer license, which is just at 200. That's already relatively low. But cut to the any whitetail licenses from 3,000 to 2,750, 8% cut there. And then eliminating all 300 antlerless whitetail specific firearm licenses. And that's going to have additional impacts on doe harvest in that no longer is archery or muzzleloader hunters allowed to use their LM type 13, their any antlerless license in the Black Hills. So essentially no harvest of does in the Black Hills on doe specific licenses. Moving on to Custer State Park, page 39, a similar change to the Black Hills where you'll see another reduction. Those CUD-1 licenses, those are any whitetail licenses being reduced from 25 to 20, and then eliminating the CUD-2, which is the antlerless whitetail licenses, which was at 50, and that's being reduced down to zero. So moving into refuge deer here, I mentioned this in the proposal that's open right now. That Sand Lake Refuge, you can see towards the bottom of the comparison table that there were zero any deer licenses in SL4, and that's being increased to 20. And then that's being switched out with the 25 antlerless specific licenses that are being eliminated and cut down to zero. So that'll be muzzleloader only and 20 any deer licenses. Otherwise, no change to the refuges. East River deer. Andy went through a lot of this. It might be easier to turn to page 41 and you can see the comparison. Third column is what it was in 2021, 22, and 2023, 24 is the fourth column. So that's gonna be the proposed change. And if you go over two columns, you can see the percent change. East River, there's several counties right along the river that had a reduction in licenses. But then for the most part, a lot of the counties to the east, a lot of that based on that aerial survey information, you'll see an increase in the number of licenses. The idea there was we already achieved that population growth that we expected. So we were going to begin ramping up antlerless harvest in northeastern and eastern South Dakota. Now that very well could change next month here as we reevaluate this winter mortality. That certainly is going to have an impact on deer populations. Definitely, we're thinking the most of that being in northeastern South Dakota and do our best to anticipate how much additional mortality may be occurring there and may have some changes next month as well. Finally, going to West River deer, I'm just looking at the comparison table again on page 44. What we're seeing is only two counties West River where licenses would be increased. That's in Corson and Lyman County. Otherwise, for the vast majority of counties West River, especially the further west you go, licenses would be decreased. Some pretty significant decreases in Meade County, Fall River County, Custer County, where we did see a lot of mortality, white-tailed deer from the hemorrhagic disease. There was also continued drought, so hopefully we're pulling out of that this spring and we can get better conditions for fawning. But being conservative there and eliminating a lot of antlerless harvest in western South Dakota. So with that, these seasons would need to take action to move forward with them and then finalize them next month if the commission so desires, but I can take questions as well.
Any questions for Andrew?
Sure.
Yeah, Secretary White, or Commissioner White.
Commissioner White here. I just see that there's some counties that didn't get any deer application or licenses from counties in here. Am I seeing right that right?
Through the chair?
Yes.
There should not be any counties with no licenses, and maybe I didn't do a good job explaining these tables, but would that be East River or West River?
For instance, Beetle doesn't have any deer.
Doesn't have, it does, yeah, you're correct. It doesn't have any deer licenses, but.
That's an old one, right?
Yeah, you're correct.
That's the block, right?
Yeah, but it has 500 type 11, which would be the any whitetail.
Okay.
And then 150 any.
So you just to whitetail.
I mean, yeah, to basically eliminate any mule deer harvest.
Answers my question. Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions? Commissioner Spring?
Brad Valley license, a lot of it was really needed. But Glad to see that it's done. Thank you.
Through the chair?
Yes.
Well, I appreciate that, and a lot of that is comments from yourself and other ranchers and landowners, West River, giving us information on these deer populations. So we appreciate that as well.
Commissioner Whitmire?
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire. Yeah, thank you, Andrew. I guess kind of in line with when Andy was up, you know, talking about that population in those northern areas having grown, whether by design or not, that just looking here, Marshall Day, Roberts, no change to the license. I'm fine today, but before finalization, I guess I'd like to maybe get a little more information on, you know, what are we growing intentionally, or is that, and now we're just happy to be there, or just, it feels like we should be putting out more licenses, I guess, or, you know, doing something. It just feels a little high to me, I guess. And when you look at the numbers, stories about the large herds that we're feeding and whatnot, I think we got a lot of deer up there.
Through the chair?
Yes.
Yeah, so winters like this, especially in intensive agricultural regions, are really challenging. You don't want to hit the deer twice. For example, if it's a severe winter and you're experiencing winter mortality, but then that's combined with exactly what you're saying with increased depredation, where these deer are congregating more. A lot of their grain out in the fields is covered up and they can't get access to that. So they have to go to stored grain resources or hay resources, and that creates conflict. So then people want those numbers reduced. So as Andy pointed out, in around about 2010, 2011, a similar trend occurred where there were severe winters, and then that decline in population was exacerbated by a desire to kind of keep our foot on the accelerator for deer harvest. And we just had a call about a lot of those exact counties you discussed, so we'd be happy to discuss that more through the month. And this isn't unique to Eastern South Dakota. When I was in Minnesota, it happened at least three times historically over the past 40 years, where you could kind of see a severe winter and then a reluctance to decrease harvest because deer are obviously causing problems in those severe winters. And it's just the really difficult thing to measure is what that mortality rate is, because deer get to a point where they kind of fall off a cliff and you can get mortality going down to less than half of the fawn surviving, and that can really affect growth rates.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Andrew, I have one. I know we'll move forward and make a decision on this in May, and between now and then we could hear more about mortality, deer mortality. Can we as a commission or you as a department say those numbers really start to increase into the spring and we need to make more significant changes? Can we make those changes past May, or once we finalize these license numbers in May, is that what we're stuck with for that year?
Madam Chair, I might defer to Secretary Roebling here, but my understanding is we've got to get the applications out, but there might be some opportunity to make some changes.
Yeah, Madam Chair, there is a possibility to do an emergency action or emergency rule change. However, in May, we would like to have our final numbers. That, like Andrew said there, is the fact we need to get applications out and start that draw process to get the actual licenses in the hands of the hunters. But if we do see a detrimental die-off, there's always the ability to call a quorum and then do an emergency rule, which does require public notice and a special meeting. So that could be an option if we have to go there. However, I'd like to finalize these numbers in May and have the biological data in hand by then to do so. So Tom, anything to add there?
Yeah, Madam Chair, just to follow up also what Secretary Roebling was describing, the license allocations that the sheets you have in front of you, one of the key steps that we made several years back is we took those actual license number allocations out of rule. And you have it as administrative rule, and those are always tracked in your meeting minutes. So the beauty is we have a maximum number of licenses set in rule. So as long as we're not going above it, you can make adjustments through administrative action. And so as we've been talking about here, as numbers change, our staff are looking at that really close in the next couple of weeks. The likelihood is we're going to bring some additional adjustments to the numbers in front of you right now for allocations. What those are, what they look like right now, I don't know. But then the other key point is if you finalize them or adopt us to move forward with them, The key then is we're immediately going into the application process and getting that all ready for the combined deer drawing and applications that will take place not too long after that. I forget the exact date. You remember, Scott? So to go back after May and make additional changes would be tougher, but depending on when that time frame is, we might have that opportunity yet because you could just take administrative action and adjust them if needed. So there might be opportunities, but we really run into the time crunch of getting applications ready and all the programming made for the deer drawing because a lot of that takes place in that June to the end of June timeframe.
Okay, that helps. Thank you. And I hope we don't have to. I echo the comments of Commissioner Spring. It's nice to know what tools we have in our toolbox. So thank you. Any other questions or comments before we move forward? And I'm going to look at our attorney. Can we take one vote on all of this? Or do we have to go through?
Madam Chair, one vote would be sufficient for the license allocation.
Okay, so we need a motion to approve what's before us. I need a motion and a second.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Whitmire, second by Bartling. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? All right, it is approved. Thank you very much. Good
information. Thank you.
I'd like for us.